New from the Embedded podcast. Female athletes have always needed grit and talent. But for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit-chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Mishmash, a weekly conversation where we try to unjumble an important and sometimes under-the-radar statewide story that affects you. I'm Shayna Roth. A large swath of the state was hit with an ice storm slash winter storm this week, closing businesses and schools and leaving many without power. According to CNN, the storms across the Midwest left 900,000 businesses and homes without power, mainly in Michigan. The latest storms come right as DTE announces it wants another rate increase. Here with me to break it all down is Bridge Detroit reporter Jenna Brooker. Jenna, welcome to Mishmash.
Thank you for having me.
Jenna, you reported this week that DTE wants to up its rates just months after another rate increase. Break down what's going on here.
Earlier this month, DTE submitted a request to the Michigan Public Service Commission, the state regulator, asking to increase their residential rate by nearly 14%, and that could go into effect as early as December. So that would mean about a $12 increase each month for the average residential customer.
Why does DTE claim it needs this rate increase? I mean, how much could have possibly changed since the last time they got a rate increase?
So they cite material and inflation cost increases, as well as their own projections, which show a decrease in power usage, which the Michigan Public Service Commission has disputed. But DTE is saying that that means they're getting less revenue. So they want more revenue for their everyday operations like tree trimming and grid investments, different programs like electric vehicles. And it seems like except for a few years during COVID, DTE has filed for a rate increase every year. So in some ways, it's not surprising that they would file this, also given that 90% of their last request was denied in November. So it would make sense that they would try and look to recoup some of that.
So it sounds like that people are using DTE less, and therefore they need to increase the price for the people that are using it?
Well, I don't know if we know that for certain. Like I said, DTE says that their own projections show that people are using power less, but the Michigan Public Service Commission disputed that, and that was one of the reasons that they denied 90% of DTE's rate request increase back in November.
Gotcha. That last rate increase, how much was that for?
They were granted just 90% of their total request, which came out to about $30 million, and it resulted in about a 71-cent increase on the average residential customer's bill.
I found a part of your piece, which we'll link to in the show notes, really interesting. It said, quote, since 2010, DTE has been granted billions of dollars worth of rate increases. The utility has the highest kilowatt per hour rate compared to the other largest utilities in the Great Lakes region, according to an analysis by Outlier Media and ProPublica. Meanwhile, DTE has some of the most frequent and longest lasting power outages in the country and has a high rate of shutoffs for customers struggling to pay their bills, end quote. Unpack that for us, especially those power outages and shutoffs, because I feel like those are the areas that people are really frustrated with.
So to write this story, I reached out to residents, obviously, for comments on the rate increase. And one resident in Highland Park, she responded after we published the article, but she told me she was typing from her phone as her power had just gone out earlier in the day from the ice storm on Wednesday. As you said, this storm knocked out power for 900,000 residents and businesses, and some of them aren't expected to get power back until Sunday. So that's 4 days, and that's not uncommon for Michigan residents. Some reports suggest that we're in the top five worst in the country for outages in terms of the length and the frequency. And then there's the shutoffs. So during the pandemic, when everyone was struggling with everything, DTE shut off thousands of customers, twice as many as the next biggest utility in Michigan, which is Consumers Energy. So like you said, people are frustrated, and it's very real for Michigan residents that they're paying some of the highest rates in the area, and DTE is requesting another rate increase while residents are suffering from these long-lasting and frequent outages, and people feel trapped. DTE is the biggest energy utility in the state, and there aren't really options for different service. Just earlier this month, Attorney General Dana Nessel acknowledged that utilities are monopolies created by the state.
And DTE is also undergoing an audit that was ordered in August of 2022. Tell us about that and what is the status there?
Yes. So last summer, you know, if you're in Michigan, you know, there was a storm that similarly left 500,000 residents without power, some for as much as a week. You know, residents lost hundreds of dollars in food. You know, this was during a heat wave. And as we've established, this length of a power outage isn't uncommon. So the Michigan Public Service Commission ordered an audit of DTE and Consumers Energy. And the commission says that they're still in the audit process and they don't have any findings right now.
Do we have any sort of timeline on that one or know what is going to happen next with that?
No, I couldn't get a timeline from the commission.
I want to dig into some of the political campaigning that DTE has been involved in. You said in your piece, quote, almost the entire Michigan legislature has received donations from DTE totaling $1.26 million, according to a report last year from the Energy and Policy Institute. That's a lot of money. Have we seen that impacting how the legislature does or does not attempt to regulate DTE?
So there was a study that 138 out of 148 members of the legislature received money from DTE. And energy justice advocates would say that we can see evidence of that. Like, for example, they tried to, you know, legislation was proposed that would require utilities to automatically credit customers when there was a power outage. Because right now you can file yourself for, I think it's like a $25 credit. After a certain amount of time, but you have to do it. So, you know, that legislation failed to progress. And I think advocates would say that that is evidence of the influence of that money playing out. But I'm not sure that we know the full extent yet of how DTE's money could be influencing the legislature. That could change, though. The Attorney General Dana Nessel advised the commission earlier this month that they need to require more transparent reporting from utilities around these donations. And so she wants to know for the past 5 years before a utility files for a rate increase, how much money the utility has spent to influence policy or public opinion, either indirectly or directly, how much they've donated to nonprofits. And she also wants to know expenses for any litigation used to try and overturn rules or statutes.
Before I let you go, you had another interesting piece this week about climate change. And what you describe in your piece, I think, is pretty typical for other parts of the state. I know it is for Grand Rapids. You said, quote, from sunshine and 55 plus degree weather to snow and freezing temperature just a few days later. I feel like anecdotally in Grand Rapids, we've been either getting a snowpocalypse type weather or nothing at all and sunshine instead of, you know, an occasional dusting or things like that throughout the winter. Walk us through what's going on in Detroit.
So this winter has been one of the top 10 warmest for Detroit in history. And we've had about a foot less snow than normal by this point in the year. And it's part of a larger trend of climate change and warming caused by human activities that cause greenhouse gas emissions, like driving or our industrial food system. And it's having an effect on pretty much everything from residents to our parks to the fish in the Detroit River.
And what does this mean for Detroit and Detroiters? What is the impact of this type of weather change?
Detroit is expected to get a lot more heavy rainfall, which will result in severe flooding. And we're expected to get more extreme heat. And it's going to be low income and residents of color that are going to be most impacted by this. Black homeowners, for example, are more likely to live in flood-prone areas due to historical redlining, and then might not have insurance because of FEMA maps that, you know, are lacking and don't account for that. And then the impact that we'll see with the heat waves ties into DTE too, actually. You know, one research study suggests that a combined heat wave and blackout or power outage in Detroit could be more fatal than Hurricane Katrina.
Oh, wow. I mean, is there anything that the city or that residents or different groups are doing to try and prepare for this type of extreme weather change?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of organizations like the Eastside Community Network that are trying to establish, you know, there's a whole initiative right now to establish central hubs around the city of energy efficiency where they're trying to have solar energy and, you know, charging stations for when things like these power outages happen, so that local residents have somewhere to go, or, you know, offer a cooling center during a heat wave like that.
It seems like the climate change and DTE are linked on some level. Is DTE doing anything that would help it to better serve its customers as we go through these shifts in the climate?
They're definitely linked. The burning of coal is, for electricity, is one of the largest contributors to greenhouse gases. So DTE has a plan to increase renewable energy, and that will certainly do some, but I think a lot would say their timeline isn't fast enough. And then they also do have some energy efficiency programs for residents that can help them keep their bill lower and try and manage the, you know, their home during these severe weather patterns, whether it's extreme cold or extreme heat.
How does this track in a broader sense with what we're seeing in the rest of the Midwest right now?
So the Midwest region has already warmed an average of 2.6 degrees in the past 50 years. And that trend is expected to continue if greenhouse gases continue to increase. Scientists project that we could see an increase in the Midwest of 6 to 11 degrees by the end of the century. And we're already seeing this impact, you know, where crops are affected by the weather extremes, like the cherries in northern Michigan. And the Great Lakes, you know, they have way less ice cover than ever before. And in cities, we're seeing that heat waves are an increasing threat.
Are we seeing anything being done by the legislature to try and tackle the effects of climate change that are currently happening in Detroit and elsewhere in Michigan and prospectively could happen across the state?
Governor Whitmer has committed the state of Michigan to carbon neutrality by 2050, but I think that a lot of researchers and advocates would say that this isn't fast enough. The Midwest region has already warmed a few degrees, and like I said, we're projected to warm significantly more by the end of the century. And even with this few degree increase, we're already seeing widespread effects of climate change.
Jenna Brooker is a reporter for Bridge Detroit. Jenna, thank you so much for joining me here today on Mishmash.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks again to our guest, Jenna Brooker from Bridge Detroit. Mishmash is produced by WDET, Detroit's NPR station. This episode was produced by myself, Shayna Roth, and the man, the myth, the legend, Hearns Laguerre Jr. Our news director is Jerome Vaughn, and our podcast manager is David Lyons. Our digital team is Dave Kim and Sophia Joswiak, and our podcast interns are Ashley Harris, Patrick Burness, and Jack Philbrandt. As always, if you listen to this podcast and you want to support it, and we really, really hope you do, you can do so by leaving us a review, or if you really, really like us, you can support WDET. Without your support, programs like Mishmash and all the other amazing things that WDET does simply are not possible. Just go to WDET.org/give.